So for today's sessions, just checking me with Eileen, just to have 45 minutes, 50 minutes Dhamma talk, followed by have a break, toilet break, 10, 15 minutes, and come back for metta meditation, and after metta meditation, take about half an hour, and then we'll have robe offerings, and then photographs. Is that okay with everyone? Should finish roughly, I reckon, about 10 o'clock, 10:15. Is that okay with everybody's? Anyone need to get to the airport or something this morning? Anyway, it's so windy anyway. Probably all the flights have been cancelled for 3 days. So I can meditate for longer, yay! And that reminded me of this gentleman years ago. And sometimes we make all our plans, and how many times do your plans go wrong? And as you think they're going to work, they don't work, and something else happens. And that was a gentleman, he was in India, he was in Mumbai, doing business, and he had his flight to catch at the Mumbai airport, Bombay, and he organized a taxi from the hotel. But you know, some of these taxis, the taxi drivers, like migrants, poor people trying to get a start in life, not like the excellent service done by Mark's taxis, Buddhist Fellowship member. But, so, he got in the taxi, plenty of time, and the taxi driver was driving to the airport, so the taxi driver thought, and he was going in the opposite direction, shortcut, and then the guy in the back didn't really mind, he had plenty of time. But as they started sort of getting more and more lost in Mumbai, he said, "Do you really know the way to the airport?" "Oh, no trouble, sir." Did that work this time? Oh my goodness. So off he went, and then it came to getting, you know, pretty tight to get there on time, and still they weren't anywhere near the airport. And so even the passenger had to help, you know, follow the directions. But they got even more late, and he thought he was going to miss his aircraft. And if you miss a plane, sometimes you've got this connection, that connection, and it can be very difficult for you. So what happened was that was he going to miss his plane, or was he not going to miss his plane? But that was about 20, 30 years ago, and many times the planes were delayed. And so that, you know, he said he still had a chance to get on the aircraft, and I think it was a KLM plane, because in that particular time the aircraft took off on schedule, and he could see the plane taking off. When he got to the airport, he could see his plane taking off with the KLM logo on the tail, and he was so upset, so angry. "You stupid driver, you should know the way to the airport of all places, which a taxi driver should know is the way to the airport. Now you missed my plane. It's going to be really difficult for me, you stupid driver. You're crazy, and I don't know why you get a job in this taxi company. I'm going to complain." And when he's getting more and more angry. Do I do anger very well? Maybe I need more training. But even that much really hurts. I can actually feel you get really tight and hot and speak loudly and speak fast. That must be really painful when a person gets angry and shouts at others. It was actually one of the reasons why when there's people in a relationship, you know, the two lovers, why do they have to shout at one another? And somebody explained it to me, a very beautiful explanation. You have to raise your voice and shout when someone is a long distance away. so they can hear you. So if you shout at your partner, it is emotionally, they're a long distance from you. But when they're close to you, you don't need to shout, just whisper. So sometimes the brain or our conditioning, it is confusing emotional distance and spatial distance. So your partner is a long distance away emotionally. They may be standing right next to you and you feel you have to shout to get their attention. When people are close to you emotionally or spatially, you can just low tone is enough. So anyway, you stupid driver, why do you... And he came and told me this story up in the dining hall at Bodhinyana. And I remember him telling me this, and he said it changed his life. Because as he was shouting at the driver, he saw through the window his plane come down. It crashed. With all on board killed. The plane he should have been on. The plane he missed. Because the driver couldn't find a way to the airport. A wonderful driver. I love you so much. I don't know what he did. So sometimes we might get upset and angry, but we don't notice how our life turns left, right. Who knows which way we're going to go in life? So I always say that whichever happens, you get lost, you get sick, you have to go to the airport, something happens. You don't know why that happened to you, but you always make the best of it. And don't get angry about things which are already done, which you cannot change. Instead of getting angry at somebody's let you down, or you missed your flight, or something's happened to you, instead of getting angry, say, oh, well, here we are, now what can I do with this? So anyway, just it's coming close to the end of this retreat, and sometimes people think, oh, what am I going to do when I get back to the real world? And every time people say, real world, I do a double take. Because real world, you know, every now and again, you have to go into like the shopping center. I forget the last time I went to the shopping center. It's the only way you can pick up something for the monastery. The shopping malls. And many people spend all their lives in shopping malls. At least a lot of it. And you think that's the real world? But it's so fake. Apparently, that in the air conditioners, in those shopping malls, they actually put scents into the air conditioning. Because the psychologists have worked out the type of aromas which will make you buy more. And it makes you stay longer there. And for a monk, to see those colours, they're just so harsh. Not like the colours of the forest. So you've got the greens, you've got the browns, you've got the sunsets. They're far more, I don't know, soft. But over in those shopping centres, it's so hard. And what do you buy in there? You know, sometimes when I've walked through those shopping centres, I haven't seen a monk's robe shop in there yet. I've seen hairdressers, and often, I know, I've not done this yet. They could go in there, so I can't do anything with my hair, can you help? But, I mean, there is. Sometimes here you do come to reality in a retreat. Because you're with yourself, your body, your mind. There's not many escapes. If you're really sick in town or fed up, you can always go shopping or go eating or go to can't go to movies anymore. The movies come home to you. But anyway, there's so many things you can do to distract yourself. So reality, the real world, yourself, your companions, nature, you see that here, which is wonderful. And every now and again, if you walk over to Bodhinyana or walk back, every now and again you may see a dead kangaroo, because they do get hit by the cars, and sometimes you can smell them, and sometimes you go and see a little kangaroo like that, and what happens when something dies. And you know, to see it rot away. But fortunately for the kangaroos, they just rot, and the animals sort of do the clean up afterwards. And it all goes back to the nature again. And you see, this is our nature of life. And so if ever you want to see, like I do the death contemplation, that's what you do in the forest. There's plenty of evidence for that. But all the animals which get killed for one reason or another, there's so many little animals get born as well. And hopefully in the warm days you've seen the kangaroos and little Joey's coming out. 36 years that I've lived here, and 36 years I always look forward to seeing little Joey poke their head out of the pouch and look at you. And feel so pleased that the mother is not afraid at all. And just would let the Joey just come out of the pouch and bounce towards you like some rubber ball, boing, boing, boing. And it's so cute to watch. And to see just all those natural, uninhibited behavior. This is Joey's stories. Joey just coming out of the pouch in a nice, warm, I think September afternoon, boing, boing, boing here, boing, boing, boing there. And then went to one of the other kangaroos, boing, boing, boing. And the other kangaroo mustn't have been in the same family, with his paw, swipe. Taught that little Joey a lesson not to be too cheeky. It didn't harm it or hurt it at all, but it was just give him a whack, like little kids. So anyway, so much joy and happiness. And the other time I remember seeing a kangaroo jumping through the forest, and actually sometimes the kangaroos do fall. They trip over. And I saw this kangaroo, not going fast, it was just jumping away, and lost its footing and fell over. And it looked at me, and I didn't need to read its mind. It was, you never saw that, did you? So humiliated, lost its reputation. I don't know, I'm talking about all sorts of nothing to do with, that's totally to do with Buddhism nature. And also, now when I do the 2 weeks retreat, especially when I did 6 months retreat, over there, what do you do with the excess food which you get? Because monks are just so kind, they put food in your bowl and you eat it and you've got stuff left over. So compost it. The best way of recycling the food is let the animals eat it, and then it gets digested and composted and spread throughout the forest. So anyway, I wanted to test out what do kangaroos really like. So I had some nice healthy foods, some like lettuce or carrots and apples and some rice, and then at the very bottom there was a slice of pizza. You know what the kangaroo did? Apple, nah. Carrot, nah. Lettuce, nah. Pizza, oh yeah. And the kangaroos, it's not good for them, but you don't tell that to the kangaroos. They love pizza. And it's a wonderful thing to see a little kangaroo with a slice of pizza. It's just the joy we have in living in a forest. So what entertainment do you want on TVs? We can go out there, there's so much interesting stuff happening. And see all the birds. Oh, the parrots. If you go to Birding Nana at lunchtime, there's lots of parrots there. But they're not there any other time of the day. They know when it's lunchtime. And they don't need a gong. Lunch. They don't need a wristwatch or one of those machines. It's amazing. They always know when it's time for lunch. And the poor kookaburras. We used to have a couple of kookaburras over there who, no matter how many times we tried to tell them about the second precept, about not stealing, I just couldn't get it through to them. But what they did, they would actually be on the railings of the upper story, looking down. And when people who didn't know that they were up there watching you, they would come out with their plate. And the kookaburras were looking down. If they liked what they saw, swoosh! And we were up there eating, and every now and again, you hear some of the lay people, ah! Oh, it's that kookaburra again. And so eventually we had to catch the kookaburras. They're easy to catch, they weren't afraid of us. And we took them at a distance to another part of the forest. Just so they could be happy, but, you know, not to steal from people. But they also, it's not their natural diet. And, you know, sometimes I saw them, they stole a chicken leg. You know, they're just the chicken drum. Drumstick, yeah. And the stupid kookaburra went up on a tree, because whenever they steal anything, it's usually alive, they've got to kill it first of all. And what they do, they have it in their mouth, whack, and they whack it against the tree. And so they're whacking this chicken drum, a drumstick, on the tree, and all the meat was falling off, whack, whack, whack. That's all I left with was a bone. And all the magpies and parrots, they knew what was going on, so they're down the bottom. Thank you, the kookaburra. Shredding. Oh, animals are just such fun to live with. And so, when you go home, real world, there's always a real world. Out in the forest, you make your world, you make it real. That's the world you live in. And no matter what you have to deal with in life, you can always make it a source of wisdom and kindness and to advance in the Dhamma. This is what you've got to live with. So make it work. So in order to make it work, when you go back to wherever you live, always remember priorities. It was a long time ago, I only remember this story yesterday afternoon. I think it's one of the stories in Opening the Door of Your Heart, but I haven't said it for such a long time. So there was a lecturer came into university with a big glass jar. And he proceeded to put some rocks in the jar until they couldn't get any more rocks in. And he asked the class, is this jar full? They said, yeah, it's full. And he said, and from his briefcase, he took in some more smaller rocks, gravel, poured that into the jar, shook it up, and the gravel managed to find its way between the bigger rocks. Is the glass full now? Is the jar full? And now they were sort of getting on to him. They said, nope, you'll probably find some way of putting some more stuff in. And he smiled and took a bag of fine sand, which he could pour in there, shake it, and even much of the sand found its way in the spaces between the big rocks and the gravel, the smaller rocks. Is it full? He said, no, you can always probably find some other stuff to put in there. And he took the pitcher of water and poured the water in there. And the water found its way in the spaces between the sand, the gravel and the rocks. And when he poured as much water in the jar as he possibly could, then he asked his class, what is this trying to teach you? What is the meaning of this lesson? And because it was the modern world, they said, Sir, Professor, it teaches us that no matter how busy we are, we can always squeeze something else in. Welcome to the modern world. He said, no, that's not the meaning. The meaning is that if you want to put the big rocks in your jar, you have to put them in first. Priorities. What's the most important thing in your life? You always put that, schedule that in first. Otherwise, you find if you put the sand and the water and the gravel in, you won't be able to put the rocks in anymore. So, what you've learnt on this retreat, what are the most important things in life? What do you want to schedule in first of all? You schedule those in first. Make if it's time for your meditation, for your health, exercise, for friendship, for happiness. And the other things, those you can squeeze in afterwards. But as long as you get the rocks in there first. So it's a beautiful simile of modern life, because sometimes people get so busy, and sometimes you have to be quiet. Please excuse me sometimes when I say, no, I've got to go back now. And so sometimes I tell you, I've got to go now to Bodhinyana Monastery. In Bodhinyana Monastery I say, no, I've got to come here. That way I can find some space and peace. Shall I let people know? Yeah, what? I'm going to let people know what I'm up to. My skillful means. So, today, always get a really good lunch here. A good breakfast, a lunch at breakfast time. My breakfast is like a lunch. So, I've been working a bit hard and just going over to Nolamara last night. Got a big katina ceremony tomorrow. So I thought, how can I get a bit of a break? So what I've decided to do today, I'll let you know my plans, my secret plans. I've told Nicholas knows it and one of the monks knows it. So, usually I go to Bodhinyana to eat. But not so many people will be there tomorrow because they'll be coming today for lunchtime because many of them will be coming tomorrow for the katina. So, I will say, no, Ajahn Brahm's at Jhana Grove for lunch today. And the Jhana Grove here, you think I'm over there for lunch. So I can have a nice quiet time. I'll be in my... No, I'm not telling you where I'm going to be. sometimes people do say, and you were telling me, are you getting more and more like the Happy Buddha? And sooner or later, somebody's going to pat my belly for good luck. They've already done that. It was great. The Chinese New Year, over at Dhammaloka, and I just happened to be standing by the door. And this elderly Chinese lady came in, and she took one look at me, and before I could stop her, she's not supposed to do that. And then afterwards, I said, oh, we're not supposed to do this. Oh, it's been good luck. Good luck, lad. Don't you try that. And then somebody said, oh, if you ever want to raise any more money for the Nuns Monastery or for other projects, all you need to do, I said, Brahm, is stand outside. You don't have to go into the casino. Just stand outside. And 10 bucks a rub. Yeah, no guarantee. Anyway. So, you can see that just one of the things which keeps you happy is just laughing at yourself and laughing at life. And just realizing whichever way your life turns, you can always make something out of it, make it useful. And learn just from this retreat. There are serious retreats, but a lot of your life is serious. The big problems. And sometimes just learning how to have some joy in your life. I don't know why you have to come to a retreat center to do that, but how many people just do laugh and smile when you're at work? That's one of the reasons why that... that's right, I remember Jason Goh. He was the CEO of the Changi Airport Group. I remember him talking at a little conference and saying that many of his employees say that, going to work is just very difficult. And going to work, there's very little happiness or laughter or... And he was telling, so why not when you go to work, whatever that work is, go every day with a resolution that you're going to make one person laugh that day. Or make one person happy. Because we all expect other people to make us happy. We expect life to give us joy. We expect life to give us even health. But you sniff. Come on, let's do it in harmony. And when you make laughter and fun of like being sick, what happens? Oh, this poor lady. She was a Buddhist. Actually, she died recently, unfortunately. But she got one of these medals, which you know, I got last couple of weeks ago, or a month ago. And so I saw her family there, and she might have reminded me of all those early anecdotes when, you know, a young woman, a middle-aged woman, having to have a hysterectomy. And you know, that was just, it's a very simple medical procedure, but emotionally, it's really big. You know, just, you can't have children anymore. And for her, it was, you know, that's a lot of emotional stuff coming up. So she asked me to visit her in hospital. And as soon as I went into the room, in hospital, the first thing she said, I said, "Mum, please, no jokes." If any of you have had a hysterectomy, you know you've got this big wound in your chest. And if you laugh, it hurts like hell. It's a waste of time telling me that. You shouldn't have invited me. The great compassionate Ajahn Brahm can't change his nature. So I told a couple of jokes. But I tried to sort of tone them down. Not to much effect. But at least it made her feel happy. So a lot of times that when we don't bring happiness into the right places, people suffer so much. So what you learn here, to be light-hearted, to be peaceful, to be wise, to be compassionate, but also to be enlightened. Light-hearted, not heavy. So you can sometimes smile at the most amazing things in life and have joy where everyone else is afraid. Sometimes that can be a very, very powerful teaching of Dhamma. There was the Tibetan nun, Australian, lived in Perth, who had cancer. And you know, she was trying all sorts of treatments. And you know, I was counseling her, being a friend, until it got to the point where she was in the hospice. And when she's in the hospice, you know, it was only a one-way hospice, that you know, she'd go out from there in a box. So, sometimes, what was really weird, she called me up one day, and she said, "Can you please come? It's a long way from here to the hospice, an hour and a half of that, or an hour and a quarter trip." And I said, "Well, I'm really, lots of things to do today. Can I come tomorrow?" I said, "No, I'm going to die in about 24 hours.
How does she know?
Exactly, how does she know? Many people I've heard tell me that. Many people who are towards the end of their life. How the heck they know, I don't know. But they know. And my goodness, she was right. 24, 26 hours later, she had passed away. Doctors, nurses didn't know. You know, she was going to die soon, but they didn't know exactly when. But she knew almost exactly, which was weird. But anyway, so I trusted that because I'd seen that before. If they say they're going to die soon, my goodness, they do. So I went up to the hospice. And in those hospices, you just can't walk into the room. Although sometimes you can. Because I remember once, Arthur Chua and his son William Chua in Singapore? I was actually visiting another person in the ICU. And as I finished visiting him, so I was walking out of the hospital, and passing me the other direction was Arthur's son, William Chua. No, that's William Chua's, Arthur is the son. And he said, "What are you doing here, Ajahn Brahm?" And I just smiled. He said, how did you know that my wife is now in labour and just about to give birth? So I can come and give her a blessing. So I walked into the maternity ward. And they said, you can't walk in here, only the husbands are. It's my spiritual advisor. Or something. And so I went in the maternity ward, because in a robe, sometimes you can get away with things wearing a robe, even in Singapore. And they said, no, you can't go past the curtain. Because, no, she's naked. You know, monk can't see a naked woman. So we made a compromise. Okay, as long as you stand outside the curtain, and Arthur was in the curtain with his wife, and I did this chanting for her, for a happy birth. And it worked. So, you know, sometimes the monks can arrive in all sorts of weird places and just be there. Anyway, he was really taken by that. Because, you know, the first birth, first child, having a monk outside giving us some support. And, you know, what sort of chanting do we do? One, two, three, go! Relax! And let go! We're very wise, monks. So anyway, when I went to this hospice, you have to check in, first of all. And I checked in, and they said, who do you want to see? And there was this Irish nurse, you know, she was a matron. And she made Margaret Thatcher look like one of these teddy bears. She was tough. Really hard. I said, what do you want? I said, I've come to see this nun. I'm sorry, you can't see her. I said, but I've just come all the way. I don't care how far you've come from, we must obey or respect our patient's wishes. Well, she just called me, now I called her, look, you can't go in. And she grabbed me and dragged me to the door. Come here. And sure enough, on the patient's door, there was a big sign. And the big sign, which the patient had done herself, absolutely no visitors. And this nurse looked to me, triumphant, arrogant, scowling, see? And I looked at it, and I saw there was something written on the bottom. Except for Ajahn Brahm. And I looked at her, and I wasn't compassionate, I must admit. It's not the sort of thing a monk should do. A monk should be just more. But I couldn't help it, but I say, see? I don't know. Was that the right thing for a monk to do? I'm not sure. I don't think so. I should be more compassionate. But anyway, she stormed off and I went in. But the interesting thing was when I asked her afterwards, you know, the patient, why did you put that up there? Absolutely no visitors except for me. He said, because Ajahn Brahm, you treat me like a person, not like a dying person. You don't see my sickness, you see me. And so many other people come into this room and they see me so thin, you know, wasting away in pain. Oh, it's so sad to see you about like this. Oh, it's so bad. He said, I have to deal with their emotional trauma. And I've got enough emotional problems myself, I'm dying. And so, what's the latest joke? She wanted to be treated just like a friend. As if that we were just in a coffee shop together, having, you know, a nice cup of coffee or something. The doctors would look after the sickness. The nurses would treat the pains and aches. She wanted me to look at the person. And that's something which I've often sort of focused on in my life. Sick person, or a person in jail for doing some terrible things, an enemy standing in front of you with a riot gear on and a stick, or a sort of a tiger or a dog right in front of you. To see past people's fear and pain, past that inside of them. And you always see this beautiful heart inside of a human being. And that's hopefully something which you may have began to see. I never went totally into the simile of the thousand-petaled lotus. But it's one of the most beautiful similes, which has, when you start a simile, it grows, and you can see more wonderful, if you like, free gifts, extras, bonuses on a simile which accurately reflects the human condition. That thousand-petaled lotus, a lotus which is closed up at night time, opens up in the morning. Why does the lotus open up? Because of the warmth and light of the sun. The warmth and light of the sun, kindness, compassion, the light, mindfulness. It's a pretty good simile. And it opens up one by one. And if you ever see a lotus at night time or in the early morning when it's still closed up, have a look at the outermost sheath. You can't really call it petals of a lotus. And it's usually corrugated. It's not smooth. It's really thick, like leather. And it's dusty. It hasn't got any differences of colour or hue on the outside. If you smell it, it doesn't have any fragrance at all. Because that has to withstand just all the winds and the storms and the dust of life. And just like you at work, your body, all the things you have to do, there's much you have to withstand to survive in our modern world. Sicknesses as well. But in the early morning, when the sun comes up and the warmth and light of the sun hit the outermost petal, it opens up. And inside that rough, dirty, even wounded, damaged outer sheath, inside of that is the first real petal of the lotus, which is, it's quite thick, but it's got the markings, the white, the golds, whatever colour it happens to be. And it does have a fragrance, but not much of one yet. And that allows the warmth and light of the sun to open up a bit further, and a bit further, and a bit further. And the deeper you go into that lotus, the more beautiful and fragrant are the petals. That's why in those similes of doing the breath meditation, your body is the outermost petal, and then you go inside that body, because you relax it until it just sort of mostly disappears. At least it's not a big problem. And you go into the next layer, the outermost layer, the mind, and then you go to the present moment awareness, layer of petals, and then the silent present moment awareness of petals. And I say that when you really get into silence, that is delicious, that is beautiful, that's so fragrant. You go into the present moment awareness, the silence, and then you get the silent present moment awareness of the breath, and then the whole breath, and then the delightful breath. Now you're going really deep inside your petals. They open up layer by layer by layer, the thousand petal lotus. And as they go deeper and deeper, it gets more and more beautiful, more and more fragrant, more and more profound. And you get nimitta, wow, incredible layer of petals in the lotus. And inside of that nimitta, you go inside, it opens up, you're in the first jhana, and you think, this is the best, this is the ultimate, you can't get... Many actually, it seems to be Christian mystics. People like St. John of the Cross, Teresa of Avila. And Teresa of Avila, she was supposed to have been levitating all the time. In the church, or when they did some of the ceremonies over there, the other nuns, the attendant nun, had to keep her eyes open and grab her legs when she started floating up to the ceiling. There's no reason to doubt that. that happened in the 12th century, 13th century, blissing out. But they call that union with God. And if you ever experience a first jhana, you can understand why that said beautiful bliss, ekakata, union, one. And that's one of the difficulties, really unfair. Because if you had a jhana and you were Catholic, they'd make you a saint. But as a Buddhist, you get nothing. So, if that guy with tattoos, if I'd have had his name as a Catholic, there'd be a church named after him, and a school as well. Saint Tattoo or something, I don't know what his name was. But it's incredible, it's powerful. And you go even deeper later on. And the weird thing is, that's inside of everyone. Your lotus, you don't comprehend what's deep inside of you, in your body and mind. And one day it just happens. Well, me too. Just even those of you, a few of you got some nimittas. Nah, it can't be nimitta. Nah, not me. Nah, yes, I'm just too much of a scallywag. There's things I do which Ajahn Brahm doesn't know about. You reckon? But it happens to you. And nimittas, jhanas, enlightenment, the whole works are inside each one of you. Just need to open it out, that's all. The unfolding of the body and the mind, going in, the deeper you go, the more incredible it becomes. And it is true that as these things happen, you unfold, and you, wow, me too. That's why you want to, oh no, maybe, you know, to add to the Me Too hashtag, Me Too, Nimitta. I've got Nimitta, but I mean that's just a diminishing, just what Me Too started off as, which is really important. Not having any abuse, but this is a positive side of life. And so that's one of the reasons why you go into a jail, you go and teach anywhere, different religions, different people, you meet them on the aircraft, in the lounges or whatever. These are people, you look at them and see right deep inside, it's this beautiful jhana, this beautiful emptiness, bliss inside, this purity. And that's a very helpful perception. See a little dog barking at me and say, ah, it's only afraid. But deep inside that dog is this beautiful heart. And many of you who've adopted a dog, especially a dog who has been abandoned. And they say, oh, who is it? Somebody was, they work at a dog refuge, a cat refuge. These are dogs who are, when they are puppies, they are looked after, but something happens in the owner's life, economic difficulties or tragedies in their life, and they can no longer look after that dog, and they can't find a home for the dog. So they put in these refuges for the dogs. And when people come, you know, because they want to adopt and look after somebody, and the dogs all bark at the same time, they're not just being afraid. They're just saying, look, I just want somebody to look after me, to care for me. And the dog, you know, would have been traumatized too. Just after a while, you give that little dog a little bit of love, and they will give you compassion for the rest of your life. They'll be your friend. It's one of the reasons why the dogs are just so... Dogs and even cats, I really respect cats as well. They show their kindness and compassion in their own way. So, sometimes you can see, even does a dog have Buddha nature? Of course they do. You look deep inside of them. What was that story of that? That woman who came back from the shop, I think it was somewhere in the United States, came back from the shops and had like all the bags of groceries in her hands, managed to open the door. And then as soon as she opened the door, this big dog ran past her into her house. And she couldn't stop it because her hands were full of groceries. So she went to the kitchen, put the groceries down, and what was this dog? And she found this dog, a very beautiful dog, I think a Labrador or something. I don't know which breed of dog it was, but you know, a biggish dog. And it was curled up in the corner of one of the rooms, already gone asleep. And it wasn't her dog. And she, you know, it was a clean dog. Obviously it wasn't a stray, it had a collar on it. And all it was doing was having a snooze. And she thought, oh, no, it's not doing any harm, it's not dirty. So she let it have a snooze. And so she went about her business, and after a couple of hours she heard a bark, and the dog had woken up, so she opened the door and the dog went away. And she thought, this is weird, especially when the dog came back the next day. So she opened the door, and the dog went into the room, curled up in the corner, had a nice snooze, a couple of hours, an hour and a half, had a bark, opened the door and went away again. And she's a compassionate, you know, giving a nice dog. It wasn't aggressive, it was really quite lovable. Always clean. But after 3 or 4 days, the same thing happening at the same time, she decided to follow the dog. Maybe can't do that. But she had a better idea. She got a piece of paper and wrote a note on a piece of paper. Said, this dog, I don't know its name, but it's been coming to my house every afternoon about this time for a sleep. Your dog is welcome at my house. I like the dog. It's clean. Causes no trouble. Just wants a place to sleep. But I'm really curious, you know, why it comes and who owns it. And she signed her name with the address. And then she folded the note up and tucked it under the collar. And when the dog left, it came back the next day with a different note on, with an answer. And when she read the answer, she said, this is my dog, and it lives a couple of blocks away, and in my house, I have a busy wife, 5 or 6 kids, about 2 of them are under 5, and this poor dog gets no rest at all. So he comes to your house for some peace and quiet. And P.S., can I come too? They're the owner. That sort of humanity and kindness. Oh, that's what makes life, and that's supposed to be a real story, that sort of makes life so joyful, calm, wonderful. That's real life. So you see, in dogs or whatever, all got this beautiful kindness inside them. Open the lotus and seeing the beauty. So whoever you see in this world, please see past anything which upsets you or which makes you afraid. Inside that dog or that snake or whatever, you'll find this beautiful being. And then when you look in the mirror in the morning, all those things, all your faults and things you're afraid of, your anxieties about the future, all those diseases and stuff which the doctors, psychologists and psychiatrists are what you have, you're much more than that. Go really deep inside and see this lotus inside. So pure, so beautiful. And that just blows you away. It will happen to you. You'll see it. Sooner or later. Not when you really expect it. Well, that's me too. Even in the dirty rags, there's always these beautiful parts. The entrance into bliss, into freedom, into enlightenment. So, it's 10 to 9 now, so we do a sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu. Very good. So now we can have like a toilet break, a 10-minute toilet break. When I say 10 minutes, I know it will be 15 minutes, but if I said 15 minutes, it will be 20. So have a toilet break or just want a bit of exercise or some water or something. And come back about for 9:05 and we do a metta meditation followed by robe offerings and followed by photographs.
Good.
With your eyes closed, just be aware of your body sitting here as usual. And do a quick scan through the body, starting from your legs, making sure your legs are comfortable. So to do that, it's almost imagining your legs to be a separate being. And you ask your legs, "Legs, how are you down there? Do you need to be adjusted? Do you want to be moved? Even scratched?" It's one of the reasons why in this tradition we meditate with our eyes closed. So you can scratch anything without feeling embarrassed. As long as it belongs to you, that is. Of course I can't. There's a blooming camera on me. So, I'm looking after my legs, making sure that they're as best I can possibly get. And once my legs are content, again, I spend some time on my butt, bottom. Because, I don't know, sometimes the buttocks are just looked upon as being even like something to ridicule, not really important. But to me it's an important part of my body. I spend so much time sitting down on these big fleshy buttocks. I've got to make sure they're comfortable too. I look after them, they look after me. And I move up to my waist, have a stretch of my back, making sure that that part of my body is as relaxed and as comfortable as I can possibly make it. It's not just preparation, it's also the beginnings of awareness of this body part and the kindness to bring it to a state of comfort. And I'm aware of the whole of my back, including my shoulders, trying to find the optimum position for my back. Sometimes I slump, and I know that that's what my body needs. Sometimes it's straight up. Sometimes you lean back if you're on a chair. You find the best position for you. And then I look at my hands. They're usually just on my lap, but now they're on my teddy bear. But they're comfortable. I'm just cuddling the teddy bear, reminding me of safety and kindness, compassion. I go back up to my shoulders and neck, making sure the neck is comfortable, head not too far forward, not too far back, not too far to the left, not too far to the right, finding a balance where the head can rest comfortably on the neck. Then going to the face. The face is where many emotions manifest. So much so that a friend can know which particular muscles are screwed up to notify that you're angry. The different facial configuration which shows that you're anxious, afraid. and the other sort of facial muscle position, which shows that you're kind and happy to see somebody. All played out on the muscles of the face. So I'm aware of those muscles and I relax everything. On the forehead, around the eyes, around the mouth. My awareness is focused there. And the attention to let it go, to make peace. Once my face is relaxed, I see the whole body now, from head to toe, relaxed, ready to meditate. And I look at my mind, my peaceometer, how peaceful am I? I'm usually 1 to 10, 10 being agitated, 1 being peaceful. See what makes me more peaceful, what makes me agitated. See what makes me aware, what makes me sleepy. That way I can know the causes and I cultivate the causes and I receive the results. Now it's time for the loving kindness meditation, guided. Usually start with just calming the mind first of all and relaxing the body. Now I imagine a little animal. I usually choose a little kitten. You can choose a little puppy or a grown dog. You can choose a baby, a person you know. Elderly person is very sick. Anybody who obviously desperately needs your compassion. And if you don't like animals, a lady here once from Sydney, a Westerner, she decided to imagine a little pot plant she had on the balcony of her apartment in Sydney. Whatever is an easy trigger to get loving kindness. Metta is like a fire, but it starts with a match and some paper. Something easy to ignite. This is why I choose a little kitten. Could be a bird which you find half dead on the ground, which you nurture back to life. I'm using a little kitten. And I just imagine walking in the forest or in the city and hearing the sound of a kitten wailing. It draws my attention. And there in a dark, cold, but safe corner, I can see two eyes. Two eyes of fear, but still some hope. Two eyes which belong to the face of a kitten, which I can't see because it's cowering in some dark corner. many times is come out to seek for kindness and nurturing, but it's only been scratched and bitten and chased away. This little eye is looking at me, afraid, but pleading. Maybe this big fat muck might be the one who cares for it. And looking at its eyes, getting that eye contact, I soften my eyes and imagine its eyes also softening. Dear little kitten, please allow me to look after you. I will never harm you. It will be my joy, my happiness, to be kind to you, to see you grow, see you mature, and see you become like every other being in this world, loved, cared for, protected. And as I say those words, knowing that cats, oh, do they really understand human language? Probably not the language. They certainly understand where it's coming from and the emotions behind it. The emotions of trust, care, giving. And I see this little face emerge out of those shadows. I see this little kitten's ears, its whiskers and mouth, and then some more of its body. I'm being shocked. Just that how thin that kitten is. See the bones protruding from the fur. That little being is probably so hungry, hardly eaten for days, maybe even so close to her death. You can see on the usually clean, well-groomed fur, just scabs of dried blood. Well, that little kitten has been through in the first days of its life was horrendous. And I'm asking it to trust me. Slowly put out my hand. Slowly see a little kitten draw back. Doesn't totally trust me yet. Dear little kitten, the door of my heart is wide open to you. Please come in and share your life with me. I have many kindnesses. I may be a monk, but I know where to get some fish and some chicken and look after you and keep you warm. Get you some milk. Dear little kitten, I care for you. With all the honesty and compassion, I send that to this little being who needs it so much. And see it come a little further out of its corner. And even though I extend my hand closer and closer to its body, it lets me touch her. It lets me pick her up so gently. And I know she's poised to jump and run and hide at any moment when my actions make her afraid and remind her of the times before when she has shown trust and was hurt so badly afterwards. Dear little kitten, please let me look after you. I will never harm you. I will never cause you pain, because I care. As I put my hand underneath its fur and bone body, hardly any flesh on it at all, so softly because I can feel that some of those scabs are only freshly dry blood. I don't know what has been done to her, but I know my job is to heal, to care, and allow this little being to grow. And I pick her up so gently and so slowly bring her out from that hole and put her by my chest, holding her, warming her. The time for feeding, for milk, will come soon. But now, I'm going to feed you all the warmth of my loving kindness. So I hold her gently to my chest. Say, dear little kitten, I give you all my loving kindness. The door of my heart is totally open. You can come in and go out whenever you want, but it's always open there for you. I will feed you, protect you, look after you, give you a nice soft place where you can sleep. May you be happy and well, my little kitten. May you have no fear, but have joy and trust, just like I have joy holding and trusting you. I imagine this little kitten, her eyes closing and having some sleep, her hearing her purr, maybe for the first time in her little young life. And I keep holding her, sharing my warmth with her little body. And as I'm holding her close to me, giving loving kindness, protection, care, love, I feel my chest start to tingle with what I call the physical manifestation of loving kindness, of metta. But this time spreading just to this little bundle of bone and fur of my little kitten. From spreading from the tail to the whiskers to each paw. Dear little kitten, I care for you. Please let my loving kindness, my metta, my compassion heal you. And it does, then I relax and find some sleep. And as I pour out the loving kindness, I imagine it like a rays of golden light pouring out of my chest into this kitten, all through her head and little ears and paws and legs and tail, to every edge, every tip of her fur. Dear little kitten, may you be well and happy. It's my joy to make that happen, to see you heal and grow. And it becomes the ignition point for my loving kindness. Because when that loving kindness is strong enough on my imaginary object, then I start visualizing a real person in this world. A person I've known, could be here, could be somewhere else. And I visualize them as if they're right in front of me. And say, my dear friend, maybe my closest companion in this life, I care for you too. I know you may look strong and grown up, and but you too are subject to the same disappointments and pain and loneliness and coldness, just like my little kitten. Human beings have so much in common. You've been let down, frustrated, your commitments have just been met with disappointment. And you say to your best friend in this world, I care for you too. I really do. You're like a little kitten as well, like I'm a little kitten. And you put your imaginary arms around your best friend. You pull them towards you and say, my dear friend, the door of my heart will always be open to you. I may disagree with you, or it may drive me mad sometimes, but I'll always care for you. always be there for you. Always be able to be a refuge in times of darkness. A place where you can feel you're accepted and not judged. As you pour out this loving kindness towards your best friend, up, down to every fingertip, as you bathe this person, as you imagine this person, you're pouring out the visual manifestation of love, this golden light out of your chest into the imaginary friend, healing them, taking away their aches, their pains, their sicknesses, giving them hope that there's other people in this world who are thinking about you, who your life matters to. As you pour out this respect and loving kindness towards the closest person in this life. And then you go further. Further to maybe your family or your loved ones. People who are very close to you. They may be a long distance away, maybe each in different lands. But you care for them now. You think of them, visualize them. And you can see the connection between a hurt, lonely, negative kitten and them. You say to those family members, your loved ones, I care for you too. And I really would love to see you happy and well, united, peaceful. Like imaginary arms go out from your side and pull them into you. This golden light comes out and just bathes them up and down, all over, inside, outside, with your loving kindness. And you pause to really drench them in your love. And then without opening your eyes, you imagine all the people in this room, the people you shared these last 7-8 days with, the people who you've meditated with, the people who you shared disappointment and who knows, maybe elation, difficulties. These have been your family for the last week. You may have only just passed each other in the cottage corridors or in the kitchen and dining room. But now's the time to say you care. As you spread this loving kindness, this golden rays from your chest to everyone in this room, surrounding them, filling in the gaps in this room, the space, and they're letting that power of loving kindness soak in through their pores, into their bodies, into their hearts. Your energy, your power, given to everyone in this room, and they're shared with you. And there's some always being greater than the parts. We care for one another. We forgive one another any faults. We wish one another success and happiness and health. May all my fellow meditators be happy and well. May they find peace in their lives and health in their bodies. May they take away from this retreat that it's okay to make mistakes. You don't have to be perfect. You can be still be calm and peaceful and wise. Compassion to yourself and all others. May I be well and happy. May you be well and happy. As this loving kindness goes to everyone in this room. Until the loving kindness becomes so great, so powerful, the energy, the light, just burst through the walls and go to everybody in this compound, the cooks getting your lunch ready, the caretakers looking after the worldly needs, the kangaroos and the birds. You send it out further to Bodhinyana Monastery, where many of my monk associates are working hard right now. Like a rays of loving kindness spreading over the vicinity, over further into Perth, into Bunbury and Rockingham, further to the whole state, the whole country, to Singapore and Canberra and Melbourne, Brisbane, further to Indonesia, Singapore, Malaysia, further to this whole world. May all beings be happy and well, and realize they deserve to be peaceful. They merit being kind. As this loving kindness goes to all beings, you too, like the little kitten, need care and love, without which the human body dies. You spread the loving kindness over the whole world. And then, last of all, you imagine standing in front of you, you, this person who bears your name, who you recognize as a people, as a person, you will always be closest to in this world, your own body of mind. Imagine looking into your eyes, how much you've been disappointed and hurt and rejected. And now's the time to say, I care for me. Whatever I've done in the past, I tried my best. But I'm not perfect. I learn. I acknowledge, I forgive, and I learn. You grow to be a better person every day. But you care for yourself first. May I be happy and well. May I be free from pain and stress and sickness. You are like that little kitten. You may pretend otherwise, but we carry the scars of rejection. We carry the trauma of disappointment. Now we heal. I care for me. May I be happy and well. As you take this loving kindness and put it right inside of you, up and down all over, you too matter. You too will receive your own loving kindness. The door of my heart is open to my own body and mind. And you hold that feeling of acceptance and care. And there comes a time when things have to be come to a conclusion. So imagine that golden light spread all over the world, being drawn in, coming in to Australia, drawing in to Western Australia, drawing in to Perth, drawing in to Serpentine, drawing even closer to Shijana Grove Retreat Center, drawing in concentrated, powerful, into Jhana Grove Retreat Center Meditation Hall, into your body, drawing in until it all comes into your heart, And you can imagine your heart like that open lotus, fully open, pure, able to receive this concentrated seed of metta. You imagine it hovering over the center of this open lotus, and the lotus, leaf by leaf, enclosing that incandescent, concentrated ball of loving kindness. Layer by layer, just closing so it can keep the loving kindness safe for another time. Please keep your eyes closed while I do the blessing. When the blessing finishes, you may open your eyes.
Sabbaroga-vinimuto, Sabba-santapa-vajito, Sabba-vera-bhati. Gando nibuto chatu wang bawa sabiti o iwa chantu sabarogo vinasatu mate bawan wantarayo Sukhi diga yugo pawa apiwa danhasi lita nichang wuta pachalino chataro dhamma watanti Ayuvano Sukhang Balan.
You may open your eyes now. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Ooh. So, thank you for your company. And I'm sure all those sniffles are not a cold, but of the joy of loving kindness.